Genesis 41 through 45. This is exciting stuff. Did y'all read this? Man, it's great. And you know what's great is when it tells such a story. Because sometimes when we talk about church and talk about preaching, it can, you know, you have 3 points in a poem, right? In a proverb and a psalm. And maybe a joke once, you know, mixed in there somewhere. But this really tells a story. We've talked about Joseph. You know, Joseph was favored, had a coat of many colors, and his brothers were jealous of him. He came out to meet with his brothers. His father sent him out there, and when he got out there, they threw him in a pit and told their dad he was dead. They sold him to merchantmen who were traveling to Egypt, and he ends up becoming the leader, the head steward, if you will, of Potiphar's house. And he's got such a magnetic personality. He's just so outgoing and so smart and so wise that it's attractive. You know, people were attracted to him, including Potiphar's wife. And her attraction exceeded that which is appropriate. And after pursuing him for quite some time, he finally has to escape from her grip. And she ends up holding his coat and laying it beside her. When her husband came home, she said, "Look, this Hebrew you brought in here has tried to mock me," is the word she used. And so Joseph ends up in prison. Of course, he gets to prison, and what happens? He rises to the top in the prison, becomes the head steward of the prison. Anything that's done, they go to Joseph. And so these two other people were in there, the chief butler, the chief baker. They have dreams and they're sad, and Joseph says, "What is it?" They tell him the dreams. He says to the butler, "No worries, you're going to be restored to your position." And the baker says, "Wow, that's great. I want to know what my dream was about." And Joseph said, "You're going to die." And that's the Pahokee translation. So they get out, but the one thing he said to the butler is, "Don't forget when you get out, don't forget me." And so the butler gets out. He's restored to his position. The baker gets out, and of course, he's executed. And then we come to chapter 41 and verse 1. It says, "It came to pass at the end of 2 full years. How many of you ever had to wait for somebody? Right? I mean, it's Valentine's Day. Maybe you could think back to the point where you said, "I love that girl," or "I love that boy, and I can't wait," but you had to wait because it wasn't time yet, and then eventually they grew on you, right? And you got married and lived happily ever after. And so, of course, that's your story, I know. But Joseph, I imagine, as he had done such a remarkable thing in interpreting this dream and encouraging the butler, that he expected any time now they would come back to get him. And restore him. He said, "Look, I don't deserve to be in here. I'm not supposed to be in here. I haven't done anything wrong." And a week goes by and a month goes by. At what point do you think Joseph quit looking out the window waiting for that butler to come back? At what point do you think he stopped asking, "Has anybody seen the butler?" You know, at what point did he lose hope? Or did he? Did he just keep checking every day? Or was it not in the top of his mind? Was it in the back of his mind that he thought, "Well, one day he'll come back. One day it'll be convenient, and then he'll show up." I don't know. It's somewhere between chapter 40 and 41 as to what happened. But we know in chapter 41 it was 2 full years. And the Pharaoh dreamed. And behold, he stood by the river. So this is his dream. He stood by the river. There came up out of the river 7 well-favored kine, fat-fleshed, and they fed in a meadow. Behold, 7 other kine came up after them out of the river, ill-favored, lean-fleshed, and stood by the other kine upon the brink of the river. The ill-favored and lean-fleshed kine did eat up the 7 well-favored fat kind. So Pharaoh awoke. It's kind of an interesting dream, isn't it? The weak, you would expect that it would be the bigger, healthier ones that would eat the weak ones. But in his dream, the weak ate the strong. The sickly ate the healthy. And so the healthy were gone. Verse 5, he slept and dreamed a second time, and behold, 7 ears of corn came up. 1 stalk rank and good, and behold, 7 thin ears, and blasted with the east wind sprung up after them. So he could look at this, and what he compared it to was just corn that had been destroyed, that the weather had just beaten on it. And so he says in verse 7, the 7 thin ears devoured the 7 rank full ears. And Pharaoh woke, and behold, it was a dream. But have you ever had one of those dreams that startled you and you had to wake up and take a minute and say how much of that was true? As you wake up and you have to remember, none of that was true. Sometimes we have such vivid dreams that even in our memory, we still hold on to that and have to remember that didn't really happen. It was just a dream. And so Pharaoh was disturbed by it. It came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he called for the magicians and the wise men, and he said, "Here's my dream. Tell me what it means." But no one could tell him what that meant. Again, the weak eating the strong, the ill eating the healthy. Verse 9, then the chief butler spake unto Pharaoh, saying, "I do remember my faults this day." All of a sudden. Guys, this is a prime example of us being ungrateful for people who are good to us. I mean, here's a guy who was living well in Pharaoh's house, chief butler. I mean, don't you imagine that's a good job? Lots of good benefits. He ends up in the dungeon. And that's depressing enough. But then comes along this dream that's kind of confusing and disturbing. And when Joseph interprets it, the interpretation is, in 3 days, you're going back. You're not just getting out. You're getting your job back. You're getting everything back. It's all going to be restored. And so for 3 days, he's hopeful. And then at the end of that third day, they come and they say, "The king wants you. Pharaoh wants you." He gets his job back. But he's so caught up in his own blessings that he takes no thought for Joseph. He doesn't remember those who help. Guys, we need to remember those who help us, those who are good to us. Did Joseph get him out? No, Joseph didn't get him out. But he encouraged him when he was in a very confused state after having that dream, when he was very discouraged. What was Joseph's phrase when he came in that morning? "Why do you look so sad?" They said, "Well, we've had these dreams, and they're disturbing. We don't know what they mean." And he forgot. "This day do I remember my faults." Verse 10, Pharaoh was wroth with his servants, who put me in ward in the captain of the guard's house, both me and the chief baker. We dreamed a dream in one night, I and he. We dreamed each man according to the interpretation of his dream. And there was with us a young man, a Hebrew, servant to the captain of the guard. We told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams. To each man according to his dream he did interpret. And it came to pass, as he interpreted to us, so it was. He said, "I'll tell you what's remarkable, is we had dreams and this man figured it out. And what he said was going to happen is what happened." How many of you ever had somebody tell you something was going to happen and it didn't happen? Right? Boy, you wait till that day, and if you finally get to a point where people tell you something, you say, "Well, I'll just wait and see what happens. I'm not going to get excited because you've been telling me this is going to happen, and it didn't happen, and now, here we are." But this man says, "He told me what was going to happen, and it happened." So what do you think Pharaoh did? He said, bring that man to me. And so they made haste, and they went to the prison, and they said to Joseph, we need you. You know what I find remarkable? Joseph didn't have a dream 3 days before that that said this was going to happen. You see how that, you know, God works different ways with different people. And Joseph, remember, he did have a dream. You remember his dream? The sheaves bowing before his sheaf, and the sun and the moon. And so his father said, you mean your mother and I are going to have to bow down to you? His brother said, you think we're going to bow down to you? But that was his dream. That was his dream. Now he's interpreting other people's dreams. He says God gives the interpretation. So they send for him. He shaves and fixes his hair, gets a shower, cleans up, gets a nice new set of clothes on. Pharaoh tells him to dream. Verse number 15, Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream. There is none that can interpret it. I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered, verse 16, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. So Joseph doesn't claim any credit. He says it's the Lord's work. I'm just a servant. I'm just a vessel for God to use. So tell me the dream. So he tells him the dream. Seven cows and healthy and then weak. And then the weak ones eat the strong ones. And then the corn and the good corn and the bad corn. And the bad corn overtakes the good corn. And he says, and it's disturbing me. Verse 25. And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God has showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good kine are 7 years. The seven good ears are 7 years. The dream is one. He said they go together. Verse 27, the seven thin and ill-favored kine that came up after them are 7 years. The seven empty ears blasted with the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he showeth unto Pharaoh. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. And there shall arise after them 7 years of famine, so severe that all the plenty shall be forgotten. You ever been so broke you forgot when you had money? You say, I don't even remember when I had good days. Right? You ever gotten to that point? Well, that's what's about to happen. That's when we consider what we've been through in this country and we look at the signs of what's coming, we need to prepare. So what does that mean? And this is what it means. It means if you got a job, don't leave it. If you are thinking about a major purchase, you might want to reconsider that. Because the next few, well, you know, depending on if you have stable income, let me put it that way. With the fuel prices and the decisions that have been made to continue to raise the price of fuel. By the way, I don't know. How do you think the windmills and the solar panels are doing in that snow and ice storm? And let me just go ahead and say this. Guys, I'm an environmentalist. I want clean air and clean water. I recycle, all that kind of stuff. But when you look at what it takes to make these batteries and how it destroys the land to make these batteries and the people that are used basically slave labor and child labor to make them, you might want to reconsider if it's really environmentally conscious. And you look at what it takes in these windmills to make them run, and I have some experience in that business. 20 years ago. So I'm telling you, you don't have to take extreme measures to think about your environment. Just make the little decisions like turning the lights off when you leave the room. And the TV. You know, don't waste water. All these things. Just be conscious. Anyway, you could tell I'm not a fan of the new Green Deal or Green New Deal or whatever it is. We don't, you know, love the land, love the environment. But what I was trying to, the point I'm trying to make is we're in for some hard times in this country right now. We're in for some hard times ahead financially. We're in for some hard times with unrest. We're in for some hard times and spiritually, because the fight against the church and Christians is only going to increase. The big thing right now is the transgender playing football. I'm not opposed to transgender people playing at sports, but they need to play in the sport in which they were born, that biology. You want to dress like a girl and play football? Okay. But it's insanity what's going on in our country. And it's going to get worse. So I'm telling you, the same thing that Pharaoh had in that dream, Joseph told Pharaoh, get ready because we're going to have some hard times. But what was going to happen first? Good times. Boy, anybody been enjoying your stocks and retirement and all that kind of stuff? Has been going up, 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 up? A few little adjustments. I know in the last year we've had COVID and that set us back. Probably going to carry forward. Be very mindful of where you stand and how you secure yourself and where you put your faith. By the way, I don't put my faith in the stock market. I put my faith in God. And so he said, Pharaoh, there's going to be 7 great years. Man, it's going to be off the chart. It's going to be fantastic. But don't eat it all. Don't eat it all. Put some in store, 20%. Save it. Store it up. Because after that, there's going to come 7 years of famine. So severe that you wouldn't even know that we ever had favor, we ever were blessed, that we ever were fortunate. God, how many of you know somebody that's really been on top, but to see their situation now, you'd never know it? So it'll be forgotten. Verse 31, the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of the famine following, for it shall be very grievous. It's going to be hard for people to deal with. And for that dream, the dream was doubled to Pharaoh twice, because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. So he repeated it. I recall in the New Testament, he said, Simon, Simon. Remember that, Luke, the book of Luke? Satan has desired to have you, to sift you as wheat. He repeated it, Simon, Simon. It's important. And so he repeated it. That's why he had 2 dreams. Verse 34, let Pharaoh do this. Let him appoint officers over the land, take a fifth part, like I say, 20%, of the land of Egypt in 7 plenteous years, gather the food, lay it up in store, so that there'll be food in every city. And the thing, verse 37, the thing was good in the eyes of the Pharaoh. Nobody could interpret this dream. And he was very unsettled. You ever have somebody interpret? You ever have a dream and tell somebody and you say, what do you think that means? Anybody ever do that? And they told you what? And you said, nah, that's not what that means. That can't be what it means. When Joseph told Pharaoh the interpretation of the dream, Pharaoh said, that's what it means. He accepted it as truth. He didn't question his background, his religion. He just said, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. In fact, look at what he says in verse 38. Can we find such a one as this? A man in whom the Spirit of God is. He said, this guy is the real deal. We've had him locked up in prison for 2 years. But he's the real deal. And Pharaoh said, verse 39, to Joseph, for as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house. According to thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt." Wow. His family's still in Israel, in Judah. They're still there. Right? Wouldn't it be interesting to see his opinion on this? He didn't call Potiphar and say, "Well, what do you think? I'm thinking about promoting him." It would be interesting what his wife had to say about that. Remember, it's been a long time. He was in prison and then another 2 years on top of that. And it would be interesting to go back and see those people and see what they had to say. By the way, who's Potiphar's boss now? If Joseph is second in command only to Pharaoh and only on the throne, I know who Potiphar's answering to now. He's the captain of the guard. Joseph shows up that first day when Potiphar shows up, and Joseph says, "Got some work for you to do." Joseph is second in command. You never think about that for your children, do you? I'm going to be second in command of Egypt. But that's what happened. And so Pharaoh took the ring, verse 42, off of his hand and put it on Joseph's hand. Understand that that ring had the seal in it, which was as good as having a black American Express card. Right? I mean, you can swipe that thing anywhere, buy anything you want. And he had that ring and he could go anywhere and they'll say, "By whose authority?" And he'd just show them the ring. "Oh, okay, yes, sir." Now, I'm sure it didn't take long till everybody knew who Joseph was. And he didn't need the ring anymore because he had his own credibility. But that ring was his key to anywhere in the kingdom, anything he wanted. And so he gave him his ring and arrayed him in fine vestures, fine linen, gold chain about his neck, and made him to ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, "Bow the knee." And he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. So it kind of reminds you of the story with Mordecai, doesn't it? Haman. But Joseph is in the second chariot, and he's got the gold chain, he's got the nice clothes, and he's got the ring, and when he comes along, everybody has to bow the knee. And I don't think Joseph cared about all that. He had interpreted, I think the most fulfillment, the most satisfaction that Joseph had, number one, he was able to comfort Pharaoh with the interpretation of the dream. And number two, he was able to save the people, to serve the people through the interpretation of the dream. His desire was to serve others. That's who he was. He wanted to be useful. He didn't care about a gold chain. He didn't care about the clothes. It probably reminded him of that coat of many colors that the brothers ripped up and put blood on to show the father that he had been attacked by some wild beast. It might have reminded him of that. But I don't think he cared about all that stuff. Verse 44, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." Wow. Well, so what happens? There were seven plenteous years. They went out and their crops were better than they'd ever been. They harvested it and they gave 20% to the government at 20% tax. I guess it was a flat tax during those 7 years. And so they put the harvest away and they stored it, and they stored it all around the land of Egypt. So it wasn't just in one place. It wasn't centralized. It was in the cities, all the different places. So there was plenty of food. It was stored the way it should be to keep. And that was a blessing. Verse 49, Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much till he left off numbering it, for it was without number. I mean, can you imagine in the early days they're going around saying, "All right, let's make sure we got this much." And so they're counting and keeping inventory because, you know, we're preparing for a famine. We'll make sure we have enough. But it got to the point where he said, "Look, we got enough. Just keep putting it in there. You want us to weigh it? No, just put it in there." And so they stored it, and they stored it, and they stored it. Isn't that great? It goes on and tells us in 51 and 52 that Joseph had taken the daughter of Pharaoh, or the daughter of Potiphar, the priest of On, as wife, and had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. And then in verse 54, we find it. The 7 years of dearth began. Are we able to see the signs? Are we able, when we see, you know, as we look at our lives, and I don't know how God's going to reveal it to us when we stand in judgment. I don't know if it'll even matter. But I would love to be able to look at the pivot points in my life, the decision, the steps I've made. You know, I look back at my childhood and I see really around the age of 12 and 14, I could see that there were changes that I made because I was going in one direction and then for whatever reason, I took a step this way. And those little pivot points where we change the direction of our lives, wouldn't that be interesting? Can we trace it back and say, well, this is the point at which it all changed? And we talk about the 16 years of being together here at the church. And that definitely was a pivot point, wasn't it? Something changed. And so we can see those marks in our lives. Well, here we are. And it says, and Joseph, you know, everything's going great. And everybody's just so full. And nobody's hungry. And everybody's rich. And Joseph's having children. He's got a wife. And life is going great. And then we hit that point and it says, and the famine, the dearth began. What happened? They went out one day and, well, that corn doesn't look so healthy. Well, those cows don't look very healthy. Those goats look kind of thin. Those lambs, those sheep look kind of weak. Just subtle. Subtle changes. You know, that's how our lives are ordered. Subtle changes. That one thing we do that we don't think is going to matter, but it changes everything. Subtle, little. And then it grows and it changes. And before you know it, we look back and we say, that's where it all changed. It's what's so incredible in a negative way about drugs and alcohol and other such as that. Somebody says, well, I'm just going to try it. Oh, just try it. It's just one time. Just see if you like it. That's the problem. You might like it. It might take over your life. And it might destroy everything you have and rob everything you got, including your health and your appearance and your family. And so this change started. There was a dearth. Verse 55, when all the land of Egypt was famished. You see, they had storage at home too. They had money in the bank. So when it started to happen, they didn't automatically turn to the government. They just went to the savings account. They just went to their storage room. And they got what they needed. Because they had all been rich for 7 years. But then it ran out. What happens when it runs out? What do? I can tell you what my boys do. They call Dad. Dad, can you put some money in my bank account? And then what happens? And mom and dad don't have it, or you don't, you know, mom and dad are gone. Then you turn to one of your friends and say, hey, can I hold a dollar? Can I borrow some money? And so you reach out, and eventually now mom and dad are broke. Now your neighbors are broke, and everybody you know is broke. And then what do? Sign up for welfare, go to the government, start at the county office and see what they can do. And then you move up to the federal programs, and you say, hey, I need some help. And Joseph says, we got a program. We prepared, we planned, and we're going to divide it up, and we got to ration it out so that everybody is equally miserable. Right? Socialism, communism. That is what happened. By the way, everybody got taken care of, and that's the whole idea of socialism, because everybody was equally broke. Y'all probably didn't think about that when you read it. Verse 57, so finally, not only was it the people were broke and the parents were broke and the neighbors were broke and they're going to the government for help, but even the countries around said, hey, help us out too. Boy, doesn't this look familiar? I can't understand how a country that's trillions of dollars in debt still sending money to other countries. There shouldn't be any of it. There shouldn't be any of it. Shouldn't send any money anywhere until our people are provided for, until our needs are met, until we can balance a checkbook. I'll never run for Congress because it's a thankless job, but I don't mind them knowing what my opinion is. Chapter 42, Jacob, Joseph's daddy, saw that things were tough, and he heard a rumor, said there's stuff in Egypt. They got all they need, more than anybody else does. He calls the boys in and says, boys, I need you to go down to Egypt and get some corn. We're out. We're broke. Time you get back, hopefully we'll still be alive. Go get us some food. And so they load up and they go down to Egypt and they are going to buy some food to bring back to Israel. In verse number 7, Joseph saw his brethren. He knew them, but he made himself strange to them and spake roughly to them. He said, whence come ye? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. Verse 8, and Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew not him. And Joseph remembered. You see that in verse number 9? Joseph remembered. He said, oh, that's what this sheaf bowing down was all about. Here they are. By the way, what do you think they were doing? They got there and they bowed down, exactly like the dream showed. Years later, but it was coming to pass. Verse 12, he says, no, y'all are spies. And so they explain. They said, no, we're all brethren. We've got a daddy back home. And by the way, we got a little brother back home because daddy wouldn't let him leave because his brother is dead. And Joseph's up there saying, yeah, I ain't dead. You thought I was dead. And so he says, tell you what, I don't believe you. I think you're a bunch of spies. Y'all have to stay here till your father comes to get you. And so he waits a little while. He says, tell you what I'll do. I'll keep one of you and everybody else go back. But you can't have it. He said, bring that other brother. So fills their bags up with the corn. And in fact, he put the money back in the bags. They're riding down the road and somebody's hearing some jingling in the back of his load. And he goes back there and he opens up his bag. He says, oh, my money's still in here. I didn't pay for this food. What's going to happen when they find out that we didn't pay for it? And so now they're full of fear. Boy, they're scared. They travel all the way home, get to daddy and say, daddy, here's what happened. We got down there and had to leave Simeon behind. And man, we're in trouble now. He said, not only that, but we got the food we went for, but our money's still in our bags. We've basically stolen all this stuff. Jacob says, oh, goodness, I've lost another son. He said, how can I bear this? He says, well, they say, well, we can go back and get Simeon, but the problem is we've got to take Benjamin with us. He said, nope, no way. I'm not sending my baby boy back, because if I send him and he dies, I'll die. He said, I just can't take the heartbreak. I've already lost Joseph. I'm not going to lose Benjamin. And he said, well, let's just eat what we got. So they take all the food they got, they eat it, and guess what? Ran out. I said, what are we going to do, Daddy? He said, I don't know what we're going to do. Y'all go back down there and get some more food. He said, we got to take Benjamin. He said, you're not taking Benjamin. I said, well, then we can't go because what would be the point? It'd just kill us. And then you'll have no, you only have Benjamin. What happened? Jacob got hungry enough, didn't he? I remember the old farmer is feeding his dog spinach. And somebody said, your dog eats spinach? He said, well, he didn't for about a week. Finally get hungry enough, you'll go to work. Finally get hungry enough, you'll find a way. Jacob says, I tell you what, take Benjamin with you. Go do what you got to do. Take the money, but take extra money. Take double the money. Take the money for the first load and the second load. And take some gifts to show that you're sorry for what happened. They travel all the way down there and show up. And, of course, you know, Joseph puts on a little bit. He says, take them all to my house. Let's have a festival. Let's have a feast. And so he kind of sits down and they're scared for what's coming. They're afraid. They're afraid. They're afraid. If you read this, you'll find that word in there. Afraid, afraid, afraid. They're scared. And what do they say? They say, this has happened because of the way we treated Joseph all those years ago. Guys, that's the thing about sin and guilt. It holds on to you. And then anything that happens, you say, well, it's my fault. I did it. I earned this. I deserve this. But what happened? Eventually, he has to come clean. He says, guys, I just been messing with y'all. I am Joseph.
They said, huh? I didn't see that in this one, but it's in the Pokey translation. I guarantee it. He said, I'm Joseph. He said, what you intended for harm, God intended for provision. You thought you were getting away with something, but God had a plan. He said, I know what you did. You were being mischievous and you were being hurtful, but he said, God worked it all out. And he fell on his neck and cried on Benjamin's neck. And oh, they just got so happy. He said, how's my dad? They said, Dad's fine. He said, go get him. Pharaoh, you know, they were this celebration. Pharaoh, everybody heard it and they came in and said, what's going on? Joseph said, these are my brothers. They've come from Canaan. And my dad is still alive. And Pharaoh said, go get your dad. He said, send your brothers back with the wagons. They just loaded up all kind of stuff to take it back. He said, get your family. He said, when you get there, bring your dad back. And he said, don't even pack your stuff. We've got everything you need right here. Boy, that's great, isn't it? What a blessing. He said, we're going to give you the land of Goshen. And you can do whatever you want. You can just have a great time. I don't know where we are in the study here, but we've got to be close to the end. So they get Jacob and they bring him back. The Bible says in verse number 27 of chapter 45, they told Jacob all the words of Joseph which he had said unto them when he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him. The spirit of Jacob their father revived. And Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I'll go and see him before I die. You know, over all these years, and I know some of you in this room have lost, and joining us online, have lost children, your sons, your daughters. The Bible shows us that God is familiar with that heartache. Though we won't have the same kind of fulfillment that Jacob had, it just reveals the brokenness and the love that continues. Let's take a break.